Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. Of course, I am your host, Clay. Today, I am here with Mark. Mark, how you doing, man?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. You know, I surprisingly stayed up really, really late, and I had like
six alarms.
What do
you mean surprisingly? You do that all the time.
Well, recently, I have been cutting back to like midnight or one. To sleep, because me and my wife are wanting to live healthier lives in 2020. I have completely stopped drinking sodas, and I am purely a lemonade, tea, and water person. So
I mean, lemonade is just as much as like soda with sugar. If that's what you're cutting off on soda,
the way I'm doing it is I did one soda a week in December. In December I did one soda a week, and then the last 2 weeks of December I said, no, I'm just going to stop drinking sodas. And so I stopped drinking sodas up until now, and so now I'm probably doing like a tea or a lemonade once a week, basically, and I'm just drinking water.
Gotcha. What soda?
Yeah. Any and all sodas. Any like and Sprite, all. Dr. Pepper, Big Red, like anything that has caffeine and, you know, and a lot of, like, my wife is like, so you can't even drink like a Sprite? I'm like, no, like, I feel like I would be tempted with a Sprite to be like, oh, if I can drink a Sprite, then I can drink a Big Red, or I can drink this or that.
Yeah,
so
what I used to do when I was trying to stay away from Coke is, like if you do like Targets or like, you know, grocery stores, you know how they have like that spritzer like flavored water.
Oh, the sparkling water or whatever.
Not sparkling water, because, well, I don't know. It'll be like cherry limeade, because I don't like salt. Oh yeah, not seltzer water. That's disgusting. Not
yeah,
that,
it is. It's gross.
But the sparkling water, where it gives you kind of like that fizz that you get from soda, like right when you pop the can or open it, you know, you get that. I would do that, and I'll get like the cherry limeade or like the black cherry or something like that, just because it kind of gives you that sensation of, you know, at least texture-wise, of like what a soda does.
Okay.
Yeah, that kind of kept me sane, and because all of that was all, you know, zero calories down the board. I think it had like less than a gram of sugar.
See, I need to get used to the because I feel like my wife would probably want to go that route of, like, the sparkling water. Because she drinks the ginger ale, and kind of that route of sodas. I can't stand them. Because they have no, like, flavor. They have no taste. Excuse me. So it's just, like, for me, it's just like, ugh. But,
I hear you.
I don't know. I've been doing that for a good while, and I feel good. You know, it's nothing too overbearing. It's not, like, crazy for me to be like, oh no, like I do have like the caffeine headaches every now and again. So every now and again I'll also have like a coffee in the morning to help me. I've kind of stopped drinking coffee over, you know, like throughout the years, but now I feel like I kind of need it. But, you know, I've been enjoying myself. Now we are going every once in a while, like two or three times a week, to go walking in the morning, so I feel better doing that. So I think 2020 is going to be a healthy year. You know, and I'm pretty proud of myself, so I feel pretty good. You know, but it is just January. You know, I'll see how it is like in June when I'm like.
I mean, you've done it for like 2 weeks. I mean, that right there is like, you know, much better than most resolutions.
Yeah, I mean, it people say it takes 21 to 28 days for a habit to kick in. So as long as we are keeping it constant, yeah, I think we'll be good. But how you been, man? You been doing good?
I'm good, dude. Here, just getting ready for China. I leave in a week. And
yeah, man, that sounds super exciting.
I mean, it's going to be cool. I mean, I'm a little worried about food because I'm a very picky eater. and I hate seafood. And just some of the videos that you see online of what people do with, like, seafood, it kind of disturbs me. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, luckily I found hotels that everywhere in the hotels there's a Starbucks, So my diet might literally just consist of coffee and maybe like croissants or something like that. So we'll see. But I mean, besides that, man, I looked at my travel plan, kind of like what's my day going to look like. And between flying from Charlotte to Minneapolis, and then there's like a 3-hour layover, then Minneapolis to Seattle, and then there's like a 2-hour layover, and then from Seattle all the way to Beijing, dude, I'm going to be about 21 hours either on an airplane or in the airport.
Oof.
And it's a 13-hour time difference from where I live. Like, I'm literally going to the future.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, so this is like Crisis on Infinite Earths. And then it's like I leave Shanghai on the 5th of February. But when I fly to Charlotte, I'll be arriving in the afternoon on February 4th. So it's like I'm actually getting a day back.
That's just awesome.
It's kind of mind-blowing. Like, when you actually think about, like, I'm losing a day going to China because I'm going in the future in time zones, but I'm actually getting that day back 2 weeks later.
Man, you are literally using daylight savings time, like, midair.
Yeah, literally.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So we'll see how we can handle this lag, because, I mean, we only gave ourselves like one day in China to recover, and then after that it's just tour upon tour, you know, going to the Great Wall or, you know, all this kind of stuff. So
it's, oh man, you got to take pictures. Like, compared to your pictures on your cruise last year, you really need to take pictures in China. Like, I feel like that's gonna be amazing.
Oh yeah, man. I have the new iPhone. I got like the Pro Max, whatever it's called. So I got like those three cameras.
The camera lenses or whatever.
Yeah, that's like awesome. I don't even know how to use them like to its to like its full extent. But man, it's gonna be good. Like, we already got like a VPN because, you know, I'm going to a communist country, so most Western websites you can't use. So in order to like actually be able to go on an ESPN or something like that, I need you got to get like a VPN. So I got that, so it kind of doesn't let the government know that I'm on American websites in China. So yeah, so it's gonna be cool. I'm excited. I don't know if I'll be able to get any access to like the comic books, so, but you know, two weeks off. I mean, I enjoyed my break last time, although all that 5G news came up and I had no idea what was going on. So it's kind of funny how nowadays there are so many comic books that come out that if you actually take a break and you miss something, you probably missed a lot. Unless I get lucky and it's like one of those crappy weeks, like I think the one after Christmas. This was like, was it last week? Where we only went one DC book and the rest was Hill House?
Yeah, that was last week, but yeah. I feel like both weeks were kind of lower as far as standards go, so.
Yeah, so, diving into the first book of the week, what are we going to talk about?
This first book of the week is going to be Aquaman 56. So, it is written, I have the credits right here, we have the special guest writer of Kyle Higgins. Then we have
love him,
Aaron Lopresti on the on art, Matt Ryan on inks, Romulo Fajardo Jr. on colors, and Clayton Cowles on letters. So the countdown to the Aqua Baby has begun. As the birth of Aquaman and Mara's child grows near, don't miss the special interlude issue in a story that takes place days after Aquaman and Mara's engagement. A violent encounter with the resurgent Kingdom of the Trench leads to an unexpected outcome, and the conflict sheds new light on Aquaman and Mara's plans for their future. That summary, like, literally told the entire story. Like,
that's one of the few that there's not even like at least a little bit of a tease. That one pretty much summed it up really well. But I have to say one thing is I really miss reading this book. Was like two things. It made me realize how much I miss like Rebirth. like the Rebirth era. And don't get me wrong, I actually love what, you know, Kelly Sue is doing with Aquaman right now. But I don't know, it was just something about seeing everything from the actual universe special, the number one that Geoff Johns wrote, and this seems to be like directly after that one, that issue, that issue, because this was all, I mean, we could talk
about the proposal about it was in the DC Universe Rebirth.
Yeah,
exactly.
So this is kind of like a celebration with everyone in Amnesty Bay, and you had some heroes there. I think it was only Batman and Wonder Woman, I believe, from like the actual Justice League. And, you know, in regards to that, I mean, they have a cool prologue where I'm like, oh, man, we got the Trench. Now, the Trench, I will say that this was not the type of story I was expecting with the Trench. But I think that Kyle Higgins, I mean, I miss him. I mean, I was introduced, I think, to Kyle Higgins. I want to say it was his Nightwing during New 52, which was amazing. And then, you know, I started jumping into more of his books. From then, I mean, maybe I read something before him, but I don't remember. What I remember is the Nightwing. And
I knew too much about writers, I was reading his Nightwing in New 52. But when I really got familiar with his writing was actually with Mighty Morphin Power Rangers at Boom Studios.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But he's been doing that one for a while, right?
He's no longer doing it right now, but he did it for a full 50 issues.
Nice. But he was also in charge of, like, wasn't he also in charge of a major event?
Yeah, that ended on issue 50.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, like, and also, I mean, he's done some indie work. I know during, like, Nation of Nerd, we did, like, The Dead Hand, which was a really cool, like, Soviet kind of story, like espionage. Yeah, uh-huh. So reading him here, I mean, I don't know, it was really enjoyable. Like, I mean, here you can see a lot of the threads with their friend B, who was kind of throwing in like, oh, they're getting married. Oh, they're going to be such great parents. And that kind of threw off.
That triggered Mara.
Yeah, that
triggered
that
her so hard.
Yeah, that did get her. And then Arthur, you kind of saw a little bit of his. I mean, he handled it much better. I mean, the way he handled hearing the news that Mara was pregnant is similar to how Mara reacted to just the hypothetical idea of them becoming parents. So I kind of like that it, you know, you kind of had that there. But also, you know what? It was something as simple as, because it felt very Rebirth, which was the oil drum that these people, like, hey, just happen to have in their possession, like, someone from the Trench that you end up realizing, and now that's the reason why the Trench are there. They're not really there. They were really just minding their business, but they took the Queen, but now, like, the Queen is now like the child, and Aquaman, once he realizes what was going on, I mean, he did what Aquaman does, which was, you know, try to, you know, de-escalate the situation by listening, like, what can I do to save this?
Diplomatically, yeah.
Yeah, doing everything diplomatically, that's a good word. And, you know, they had a small little talk while the queen was still inside the incubator, or like the child. But he's like, you know, whatever, we're going to get you out of here. And, you know, once everything looked bad, the oil drum getting ready to get destroyed, I mean, it was... And the Trench looked like they were ready to pounce. You know, there was the Queen on this really weird... Like, see, those are the kind of things, like, I feel like I'm going to see, like, on my plate in China. And, like, those are... those are the things that scare me. And, you know what? I don't know. It felt... It was innocent. It was very lighthearted, but it... You know, but it felt, I don't want to say this word because, you know, maybe like the hardcore DC like movie fans hate this word, but like hopeful. but I don't know, it just encapsulated everything of what Rebirth was in the beginning. And it was like, aw, I miss this kind of thing.
You know, it does give me hope for, you know, maybe... Because I haven't been liking Kelly Sue DeConnick's direction for Aquaman lately, and I'm hoping this is something that was planned, at least the story, so that way she can go back to that route and bring Aquaman and Mira together and have this child. And I think it would be a really cool thing.
Well, I mean, I think that's what her endgame is. Is just, I mean, she is known for deconstructing characters and building it back up. So I think that that's exactly what she's done, which was she just kind of broke down the relationship and created a rift. And what was the rift? I mean, this child. I do believe it'll eventually get there. But this felt more like of that time. Like, you know, the Aquaman we're getting right now is more consistent with what we're seeing, you know, line-wide, you know, in DC. So I don't know if it'll get back to this. Because I've grown accustomed to really digging. I mean, I don't know if you saw like the B cover of Aquaman, like that was gorgeous.
Oh yeah.
The B cover.
I mean, have it right here.
I've grown accustomed to Aquaman looking like Thor, and I dig it. I hate the tattoos. The tattoos are the worst thing ever, and I hope the gods one day just, you know, say like, hey, you know what? We're gonna take this away because you don't.
Well, the one thing that I noticed recently, and I know that we haven't really talked about Aquaman in a while, but it seems that a lot of the art for the past few books have kind of hidden the tattoos anyway. And even at the end of this book, Aquaman is wearing his actual uniform, so we don't even see the tattoos.
Well, I mean, we would have not have seen it since this is a behind, you know, a story in the past.
Yeah, but in at the very end, it shows.
With Mera on the. Yeah, true.
Yeah. And he's wearing his original suit, and so you can't even see the tattoos.
Yeah.
So maybe it's going to be one of those things that they'll keep the tattoos, but they'll just have to write him wearing his costume so many times, so that way we just don't see them.
Okay. Well, I mean, that works too. So, yeah, I don't know. It was just. It was innocent, it was nice, it was very reminiscent. I felt nostalgic just reading what Aquaman felt like in the beginning, so it was nice. So for me, anytime I can see Kyle Higgins on art is a win. I mean, on writing duties, to me, is a win. I love the art. I think Aaron Lopresti, I mean, Lopresti did do a lot of work. I mean, I think he did some, I don't know why, but I feel like he did some Action Comics mixing, like switching with Patrick Zercher.
I think so.
I think it was like Lopresti. I think like Tyler Kirkham did some work also, like, because there was like a nice rotation. I think it was on Action Comics, so you know, that was nice. So I totally dug this issue. Like, I would give this issue like an 8.5.
yeah. I would at first I was kind of really just disappointed when this was announced, because it was a guest writer and not like Higgins coming back on to DC for this like ongoing.
Oh yeah, but, yeah, for sure.
But actually reading it, understand the context of what it was, I really, really enjoyed it. I would give it about a 7.5. I did enjoy the art. It has been a lot better, like in recent issues for me. Anyway.
Oh yeah, no, it's been better. It's just that art put me back in Rebirth. So that's why, like, for me,
okay, it's
not even like Lopresti's not like my 100% my cup of tea, like what I like, even though I thought it looked well, cuz it kind of looked like, you know, a little bit of Brad Walker and stuff like that. It was just when I saw it, it just put me on, you know, in that time. So I kind of,
yeah, for sure.
So maybe I fell victim to reading this book in, you know, kind of like a, not so, yeah, kind of like in a bias kind of way, like a Rebirth bias. And so, I mean, that, like, I don't know, that's like the easiest way I can say it. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. But going to now, it was funny, jumping into Batman's Grave, because when I text you, I'm telling you kind of like, hey, I'm just giving you an idea of what I'm going to read. I, you know, I gave you my list, and then it was funny because you mentioned Batman's Grave. And I was like, uh-huh. Oh, God, sorry. So I guess he read it. And you sent me a picture of just one guy, like a deformed face, getting punched in the face by Batman. And I was like, oh, okay. So I'm like, I was like, it kind of bothered me because I was only looking for that face during all the action scenes. And I hated it. It bothered me because it was like the third to last page. I was like, freaking A, man. You know how many times, like, I had to, like, be, I'm, like, scoping with an eagle eye, like, where's this dude's face? And it was, like, the third to last. But yes, Batman's Grave, number 4, by Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch. Why did a blackmailer become a murderer? How does the Batman survive an opponent who can kill him with his own mind? Find out all of this and more in the latest chapter, blah, 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 blah. All right, so this was like...
Wait, what?
Yeah.
That wasn't the story at all.
Yeah, I was like, a blackmailer become... survive who can kill him with his own mind.
I can understand the blackmailer. Okay, so if... I know it's been a while since we've talked about this book, but... and I know that this book has been kind of confusing because of how much content is in each story, but if anybody remembers, in the last issue, Batman went into an individual's, and I can't remember his name, but he went into his house, and then that's when Batman was attacked.
Yeah, when he fell in, like, that Bane figure.
Yeah, and then we found out like at the very end.
Helfheim.
Yeah.
Helfheim, or whatever.
And we found out through his very unique investigation of, like, putting himself in the killer or in the victim's shoes again, yeah, like he did in the very first issue. He did that again in issue 3, and we found out that he committed suicide with both pills and with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So that person was being blackmailed by this guy here who is calling all the shots in this issue. So yeah. I can understand the blackmailing part, but when it says somebody who says here, how does the Batman survive an opponent
who can kill him with his own mind?
I didn't get that at all with this story.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes the solicits can also get a hold of you too here. The first thing I would say here is I will say that reading this story, because this one, you got a little bit more of a balance between dialogue and kind of like the no dialogue pages, which just kind of features Brian Hitch's art. Because, uh-huh, I mean, I think you would say that, I mean, you might have still gotten like 6 to 8 pages of no dialogue, but at least it wasn't consecutively. It was,
yes,
it was mixed in between. So that was one thing that was nice. Another one was nice was Warren Ellis's portrayal of Alfred in this issue. He felt a little bit more helpful instead of snarky, witty, kind of like pretty much just mocking Batman for his choices and, you know, like the decisions that he makes against who he goes after kind of thing. Like it felt a little, I was like, okay, you know, I'm kind of happy that we're getting a little bit more of, and not so much, but at least closer to the Alfred that we knew and we loved. R.I.P. but overall, what did you think of the story?
This story, I mean, I was a little irked at the art. You know, that's why I sent you that small little photo of the deformed face. But
actually, I'm lying. You know, I mean, I feel like there were just as many consecutive ones in the middle. I don't know why this one felt more balanced out, but now I'm like looking through the pages. I'm like, no, this was the only difference is that a several pages has like that.
Well, and that was the thing. You saw people yelling out. You have this one guy, like I said, who is calling all the shots. That's kind of talking in the background while all the fighting is going on.
Yeah,
and you know, so that helps a little bit, but I think Warren Ellis, he has a story, but I feel like he was like, hey, Brian, I really want you to tell the story also. And this is very dependent on Brian's art. It really is.
Do you think that this is more Warren's thing, or do you think that DC, they're like, man, we have an all-star cast of Brian Hitch and Warren Ellis? Warren Ellis is on Batman, people. We need to milk this. But, like, Warren Ellis really just wanted a 6-issue mini, but DC kind of said, like, hey, let's turn this into, like, a maxi series.
I could see that.
And maybe Warren's just like, listen, I'm not going to compromise my story, so we're just going to get a lot of action sequences, uh-huh, and just the first half of the book is very loosely going to tie into some of the you know, what my story is going to be, but it's going to be like the first half is all Michael Bay, and then I'll give you,
yeah,
later on I'll give you the meat and potatoes.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I still enjoy Hitch's art. I really do. There is stuff that I feel like once it goes on for so long, you can kind of tell that he is wearing himself thin on these books. Just because of the consistency in characters and how they're drawn. So, I could see Hitch is a very cinematic artist. And you can definitely tell.
I mean, he's known for his splash pages.
Yeah, yeah. And you could definitely tell with, you know, this close quarters fight. It's really cool. But I don't get much story out of this. Like, the one thing that we've been having a problem with is understanding what story this is and, you know, what to expect moving forward. But, you know, with just getting a whole bunch of fighting, yeah, that's what Batman does, but you read a book for a story, not just for, you know, a beautiful art book.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, because for this, I mean, you could just read, you know, the best of Brian Hitch and just look at his, you know, look at his catalog of art.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But because of that, I think I would give this book a 7.5.
I mean, I'll give it, yeah, I can give it like a 7, but I mean, it's not, I don't even think it's warranted. I think it's more because I'm enjoying the, it's like I'm enjoying the story by pictures because this was literally just Batman going to question a dude. And
yeah.
He got nothing out of the thing. The guy killed himself. And that's it. So the story at all, if you want to say it progressed by like 0.75 decimals. And that's only because a dude killed himself, so a lead's gone. But now it's only going to lead Batman to having more questions, which I feel is going to be, I don't know. I mean, are we going to start getting some detective work? I don't know, but I'm just surprised that this is what we're getting for a book that comes out once a month. So it's a little, you know, it throws me off, but you know, at this point it looks like I'm still going to stick with it because I kind of just want to see what Warren's going to do, like what's his end game. But it's not like a book that I look forward to read just because I haven't been given anything to look forward to. So I feel like this is just one of those throwaway books that I'm like, all right, I know I'm going to talk about it on the show. I could just read this last minute because I know I can finish this book in like 4 minutes.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. So,
you know, this is always a quick read. So,
but with that, flash forward.
Yes. Flash forward number 5. Wally West has gotten to the heart of his mission to save the multiverse and the heart. And in the heart he found was his own. When it's discovered that the dark multiversal world that's threatening all of existence is the world in which Wally's children are alive, our hero must overcome his greatest fears, regrets, and anger to do what's right. But what's right is the hardest thing anyone ever would ever imagine doing, letting go. So this was a little, like, it does do that. This story definitely does do that. It was a little play on words. Because we do find out that, you know, this, is it Jai in Iris? I can't remember the names of the children.
Yeah, I would say Jai. Kind of like Jai Courtney, the boomerang dude from Suicide Squad.
Okay. So, they are there, but this is, we have to think of it in a way of saying, you know, because a lot of people have been having a lot of fun with this book because of the small little Easter eggs and cameos of, you know, things in the past and, you know, forgotten heroes and things like that. But we have to remember what he's dealing with is the dark multiverse.
Yeah.
So think of what we were getting in Metal with the Batman Who Laughs and all those evil versions of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn that, and it is reiterated here by Tempest Fugenot, that these worlds are created by the fears of our heroes.
Yeah.
And this world that they are on currently was created by Wally West.
Which he learned at the end, which would make kind of sense because this is, for the first time, the first story that felt, the first world that has felt very personal for Wally.
Yes.
And
yes.
For now, for good reason, because his fear, as you've learned, is his, you know, of him losing his children.
Yeah. And we get a lot of flashbacks. We get a lot of, you know, seeing his origin story. And I really love that double splash in the very beginning, mm-hmm. where Tempest is telling his Wally's story. And we get, you know when Wally got his first Flash suit.
And Tempest Tempest looks great, by the way.
Yes, yes. This is top Brett Booth for me. Like, this issue was top Brett Booth. I know that in a rush, Brett Booth can be a little scratchy. This was actually really, really nice. I really loved it. We got to see Jay and Iris in their actual uniform running away which from this nice. Black abyss, which mm-hmm. was really, really cool. But, you know, we get small little flashbacks where Wally is thinking about when they were just babies, you know? And, you know, that black abyss or the I forgot what they call it, actually. It's basically the Dark Multiverse, you know, taking over. And, you know, Wally's had enough. He wants to have it all. He wants to have his family back. He wants to be able to live a happy life with his family. And so he attempts to use the wand that Tempest gave him, and it literally does nothing. Yeah. And we find out at the very beginning, when Tempest is telling the history of Wally West, he's actually telling this to the Mobius chair.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mobius chair makes itself known to Wally at near the end of this book. And Wally doesn't sit on it. He just touches the chair, and he gets a little glimpse of what the, you know, what is his future. And that future is, like the preview said, was letting go.
Yeah.
You know? And he doesn't want to, but he ultimately knows that it's the right thing to do. And so what I think this is, we have to remember that just like in the story of my favorite of the Dark Multiverse stories was the Merciless, the Batman Merciless yep. or whatever, with Ares or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
None of those heroes are our own from this Earth.
Yeah.
So even though they died, it doesn't mean anything. I think Wally is going to eventually, like in this very next issue, issue 6, it's going to be the last, the finale, he has to realize that letting go of this world does not mean that in the future of his own world, or our own universe, or whatever, that Jay and Iris can't come back.
Yeah.
So I think that he is going to be able to let go, and hopefully through the Mobius chair, he'll find a way to have his family. Possibly.
Hope so. I hope so. I mean, we'll... Yeah, I mean, it was... This little mini event has finished much quicker than what I found. Like, when I read, I was like, oh man, I can't believe we're at the end already.
Yeah, it did go by pretty fast. I think... I know that
Brett Booth has talked a little bit. I mean about like lack of sales, because I feel uh-huh. like this was supposed to be longer, but I think they kind of squashed it and made it smaller because of the lack of.
Sales I wouldn't that, be surprised
that the lack of sales and, that this book was making.
And that's what I was so confused about, because you know we saw so many people, you know, crying wolf over the ending of Heroes in Crisis,
mm-hmm.
you know, about the. You know, Wally West needs justice and all of this stuff. And people were really excited when the Flash Forward book was announced with Brett Booth. But when they saw Scott Lobdell, they're like, crap. And yeah. So I feel like a lot of people jumped off of Flash Forward because of Scott Lobdell, unfortunately. But, I mean, if you're a fan of Wally West, you just got to be a fan of Wally West and stick with it, you know? If you want a story or an ongoing or... whatever, if you want more Wally West stories, then you have to be willing to
read. Yeah, I mean, the numbers of this event are going to do nothing to suggest that DC should move forward with a Wally West solo. Because they're going to be like, why,
yeah, for sure.
why put any resources into a book that's not going to sell? And I think that this is...
Yeah.
I mean, well, this is like Stan Twitter in a nutshell. We stand Wally West. Okay, well, I mean, that one, one page, one Twitter person can say, I stand Wally, and it gets 5,000 likes because everyone likes Wally on Twitter, but not one person. But out of those, you know, you got 100 are buying the book. So it's one of those things that, okay, so your convenience stands, I guess. So that's just what it is. And unfortunately, I mean, I think that's because this is moving rather quickly. So I think it fell victim to it. And, you know, it is what it is at this point. I mean, you can't really do anything about it. But it was a decent book. I mean, I felt it. You can kind of feel like, you know, Wally's pain. Like he's finally got his kids, you know, and I mean, he was so entrenched that he didn't even believe that if those were his kids or if there weren't. I mean, but I mean, you saw how angry it was when they were taken away and what he did to Tempest. And then how he tried to literally with that wand go around the world. Like he tried to cover it himself. Like he did everything that he could. I mean, I think you were kind of seeing like Wally West at his peak. But you know, at this point it is what it is. I don't even know what to add to it because I mean, this book was, it's like a bummer that it's ending so soon. So I'm kind of like at a loss of words. I don't really know what to say about it, but I will say.
Yeah. And you know, we don't necessarily know the plans for Wally West after this, cause in all honesty, nothing as far as solicitations or news from DC themselves have really featured Wally West, like, at all.
Yeah.
And so...
But it gets me worried because, I mean, you got, like, 5G coming up. Well, if it does, with, you know, all the friggin' hoopla that's going on in with DC. But even so, I mean, let's just say if there's a Flash, I mean, the talks of the new Flash is going to be Captain Cold's kid. No, Mr. Freeze's kid. No. Captain Cold.
No. Captain Boomerang.
Captain kid. Boomerang's kid. So... God. So, I mean, with that, I mean, you could clearly see that there's going to be no Wally, like, if anybody's has wanted to at least get a glimpse of, oh, man, like, OG, let's get the OG Justice League, the one that I grew up with, like, on the animated stuff. Like, no, because, I mean, we're going to be getting Captain Boomerang's kid. So, you don't really know what is Wally West for this whole year going to be, like, he realized that he needs to let them go, but now I'm on a journey to find him. Like, is this just going to be like a wild goose chase trying to find his kids? Like, is that Wally's 2020 story?
I hope not. I really hope not. I really hope that, like, it's not this, like, dumb, hey, Wally's going to be in the background. Like, he's going to willingly run through the Speed Force and be lost because he's trying to find his kids. I would hate that.
Yeah, so that's... I don't know. That's kind of like how I feel like what's going to happen with the story. So just because of that, I mean, I'm kind of like thrown off by it. But anyways, Nightwing 68. I don't think I've read a Nightwing book since maybe the second issue after he got shot in the head.
I don't know what the hell's going on in this book,
so,
but I love it. So I love it.
I mean, it was
so happy.
Yeah, it was a cool book. So, okay, this is a lengthy synopsis here. So, being a superhero often means layers of identities. For Rick Grayson, he once had a life as a sidekick to Batman, a life he forgot when a terrible gunshot wound erased his memories. It kind of makes me feel like with this synopsis is that they're starting to get back to, you know, maybe Nightwing, and they're just really recapping everything that's happened the past, like, year with Rick.
Well, I feel like... if there's any book a Nightwing fan would want to read, it has to be this one.
Yeah, so...
And so I feel like this synopsis has to kind of spell that out.
Yeah, so when his long-lost grandfather, who is also a super assassin called Talon, returned to his life and implanted false memories into his brain, that added another layer. Now, with Talon vanquished, Rick Grayson has to shake... Oh, man, they just threw that out there in the synopsis. Now, with Talon vanquished, Rick Grayson has to shake loose the truth. Is he the man he has created for himself, or is there still some of the old Nightwing lurking around inside his head? Even if he wanted to, could Rick be Nightwing again? When four other people have put on the mask and picked up where he left off, Whichever it is, Talon made a mess of his current life, and now Rick has to start putting it all together.
Whew, that's a lot to unwind.
Yeah, it is. But, I feel like it, I mean, it did a lot in this story, like, kind of telling
like you literally don't have to read anything else.
Well, I mean, the thing is that, like, it tells him, like, bam, okay, implanting the false memories. I mean, like, Nightwing, he realized that, okay, he's like, because at the beginning, he's fighting, and he's like, man, I feel like someone's in my head, because there's, like, literally two versions of Rick at this moment. I mean, since I haven't read Nightwing a lot, I'm like still struggling saying Rick
Grayson. But you also have to remember, a lot of Nightwing fans were told to read the last annual, which did give all of the inside details as of why Rick was Rick. It was because Talon was giving him a drug that, you know, suppressed his memories, and the therapist that he was seeing was also giving him more drugs to sedate his memory.
Yeah.
So that plays a lot into this story that is going on right now. And I don't know what happened last issue to trigger the memory loss to, like, go away. But in here, he is clearly getting all of those back in, not in full context, because he says, all these people that I've seen before, because we have seen everybody except for Bruce come to see Rick in this storyline. And I know you haven't read it.
Well, I mean, Barbara kind of, she showed up early.
Barbara showed up early. Alfred showed up at one point. I believe.
I don't know if Damien ever did.
I don't think Damien ever did. And I don't think Bruce ever did. So I think that might be it, to be completely honest. Okay. Those two characters. So he has recognized these people's faces, but he doesn't understand the context of, like, because he has the flooding memories of him being in the costume, and then he is also remembering his villains, and he's remembering the fact that they want to kill him so badly.
I mean, even also, but he doesn't understand why, because he's noticed, like, here he is, like, falling off a platform, and he's falling hundreds of feet.
And yeah, and we've gotten that a lot. Mm-hmm. even immediately after him getting shot in the head, there was some moments where he was being mugged, and I believe there was another instance, like, something had happened.
Yeah, it kind of felt very like Jason Bourne.
Yeah, he couldn't control his body, and it was just reactionary for a lot of this stuff. And even now, you know, one of my favorite, like, and it's more of like pop art. It's not necessarily anything from a comic, I don't think, because I haven't read it. But one of the beautiful things that I've read about Nightwing is that he doesn't like flying, he likes falling.
Yeah.
And so it feels so normal to him. And he says that here. You know, he's falling from this bridge, this giant bridge, and he should be screaming, he should be freaking out, but he's completely calm, he knows how to twist and turn his body, and, you know, we eventually get one of the other Nightwings to save him because he barely misses the ledge to grab on. But, you know, those things that make him Nightwing, that make him Dick Grayson, are coming back.
Yeah.
And this is the glimpse that I needed to really be like, okay, we're finally getting Nightwing back. Now, what literally just popped in my head, if this is true, we're getting Nightwing back right before 5G, where they're going to age him until he's 70 years old, and he's not going to be Nightwing anymore. So, F my life. So.
But with that, geez, I forgot to give kudos to Dan Jurgens, who's the writer. Now, yes. we do get split art between Travis Moore, who does more of, it looks like more of like the flashbacks, and then yes. Ronan Cliquette, who does more of the current stuff of like what's going on. And then you have Nick Filardi on colors and world design on letters. So, yeah, I mean, it's, now I'm going to ask a really like dumb question, because I know I haven't seen her in a long time. But what happened to that girl, the girl with, like, the blue hair that Dick was, that they, like...
So, when he moved to Bloodhaven, he was with, technically,
but then she kind of, like, went back to her villainy...
Yeah, so technically that was with the Rebirth title, and that was still under Seeley, I believe, was still writing at that point. Things were getting very complicated in their relationship, and I believe there was a... false positive on a pregnancy test.
Oh, no, no. And like, so, that part, like, that stuff I know. But, like, have they ever talked about her again after, like, they've left? Or was that just kind of...
No, I mean, she was running that whole... actually, because she had to go to jail, didn't she?
Yeah, because she went back to, like, her... When she started, because that the villain, I'll have to go back and see. I don't know if it was like Mockingbird or she was like a bird of some sort.
Yeah,
Evil side like kind of like convinced her to go back because I don't know.
Yeah, her old mentor convinced her, but I think either they showed her getting out of jail off of bail or whatever, and she had to go to probation, or they just haven't shown her getting out of jail yet. So I don't know. That's okay. Interesting.
So like I don't know who this girl is, but clearly you could tell
this,
that...
This girl, she is the bartender at the bar that Rick eventually ended up working at. They've gotten to know each other very well, and, you know, they're in a relationship. And, you know, it's really weird because, like, there was times, like you said, Barbara came in really early on, and this bartender, this bae... she could really tell that Barbara cared about her, and so she could tell that there was a history, and so that's why she's questioning, you know, hey, you know, what about us? Are we still a thing? Do you still care about me? Blah blah.
Man, because this could be really heartbreaking. Like, if he fully gets all his memories, and now, you know, like, man, once you get all
and
memories,
he says I am remembering everything else that feels like a far off dream, but I still very vividly remember our time together. And so I think that when Rick turns back to Dick Grayson, or I hope that he turns back to Dick Grayson and he doesn't just keep the Rick thing going, because that would be dumb. But I think that he will have to live with the fact that he lived this other life, because he's done it before. He did it before in Grayson when he was a spy.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, he can still have a relationship with his woman. I don't think it'll last, just because that's just not how, you know, Nightwing is as far as his story. You know, he has several love interests, but I don't see this bae, you know, woman staying in, you know, Dick's life very long after he gets his memories back.
Yeah. No, I agree. But it's... I mean, I don't know. I read the story, and it was kind of like it felt one of those, you know, like, I'm cheering for him. I'm like, come on, dude, you're almost there. You're getting it. Let's go. Come on. Like, I don't know why. And I've read absolutely nothing, so I should have no, like, connection to it. But just the fact that you know that this is, you know, Dick Grayson, you just want him so badly to get back to his...
And the thing is, I think they did this on purpose, in the sense that whenever Rick was fighting, yeah, he had some of his old movements, but you never really saw, like, his Nightwing fighting style. You never saw him fight like he used to.
It's still rough.
Yes.
It's kind of like seeing the newer Star Wars movies. Like, when you're seeing the lightsaber fights, they're not clunky like the old ones, but, you know, choreography back in the...
They're not as flashy as the prequels,
but, like,
yeah.
The prequels, I mean, this was, like, it was smooth, it was fluid, it felt very reminiscent of how you would imagine, you know, a Dick Grayson fighting. Here, this felt more like... There were moments of athletic ability and stuff like that, and you could see, like, small glimpses, but it still felt very, like, raw.
Oh, I still, like, for me personally... Like, as soon as he takes off the Talon suit, and you just see him in that stance with the, like, it's literally pieces of wood in his hand. Like, I got chills. I'm like, oh, this is Nightwing. This is Dick Grayson. He's fighting again. And it's awesome. You see him moving fluidly, and, you know, he is, like, not necessarily talking in a Dick Grayson way, but, like, just having that moment of being able to fight with, like, fluidity, I would say, against Talon, looked really nice. I enjoyed it a lot. And, like, I have no idea what's going on with this, like, Red Condor or whoever this guy is, But I completely disregarded him. I read the text, but I was like, I don't care about you right now. I'm sorry. I'm with my boy right here, and he needs to fight Talon, and he needs to win. And I really enjoyed this book.
Yeah,
like it's not a 9 or a 10. I wouldn't even say it's a high 8. I would give it a high 7, low 8. I would go 7.9, you know, just because I can't really say that it was. If he would have been like full Dick Grayson, like been like, I remember everything, you know, I feel like I could have gone to that 8, possibly 9.
Mm-hmm.
But 7.8, 7.9.
Okay. I don't know. I'm kind of like a stickler with art, and I don't normally mind when there's multiple artists. I just usually wish that the artists have more of a contrast. That it, I mean, like not like contrast, but it's kind of like similar, I guess you could say. Even though, yes, I understand that one portion is flashback, like in the beginning, and then you have another artist that's doing all the current stuff. But then that artist that was doing the flashbacks at the beginning, he's the one that ended it in the current. And it's, I don't know, those are kind of like small little pet peeves, like when you're just having too much art.
Yeah, they swapped. Changes.
And even so, I mean, the artist that ended the book, his style from the end of the book looks completely different than how the beginning of the book looked. So even he like changed out. So I was kind of, I don't know, that just bothers me because it just feels like there's like multiple books in there. And but, you know, that those are just, you know, like personal preferences. But going into the last book, I mean, I don't have the synopsis, so I'm assuming you do. The Question, The Deaths of Vic Sage, number 2.
Yes.
By Jeff Lemire, Dennis Cohen, Bill Sienkiewicz, and the, oh man, I'm forgetting, the Chris Sotomayor.
I have it right here.
I believe he's doing the letters.
At least I thought I had it right here. I had it. What's wrong? Where is it? Oh, wait, right there. Okay, so Jeff Lemire on writing, Cohen on pencils, Sienkiewicz on inks, and Chris Sotomayor on colors. Yes, with Willie Schubert on letters.
So this story to me, now this one I read last night. I read this one last night, and I have to say that I absolutely adored this book. Like, I mean,
okay,
I loved it.
Well, let me go ahead and read this synopsis real quick. It says, in modern day Hub City, Vic Sage died, and then he woke up in Hub City in the 1800s. The legend of the man with no face rides across the Old West, discovering a shocking connection running through his history all the way to the day that he died, and pointing to more carnage yet to come. Now, you said you absolutely adored this book. I will say, this book confused the shit out of me.
I mean, was it confusing? Sure. Because, I mean, there seems to be a much bigger story in, like, I guess you could say, like, the deeper realms of, like, exactly who is Vic Sage. Like, in that sense, yes, there's a lot to unpack, and I don't know if this book is going to fully address it, because, I mean, there's only one issue left.
There's 2 issues left.
Oh, so this is a 4?
Yeah,
man, this is, Black Label stuff's all over the place. Okay. So So, I mean, we might be able to get a little bit more. This one, I took it as these stories kind of feel like one shots that just happen to have a, you know, like a small little thread that's connecting each one of them. But I don't know. It's just one of those kind of, it didn't feel like if it's a DC book, even though, yes, you're looking at, you know, we're dealing with a character which is Victor Zsasz. I mean, we know it's not the Victor Zsasz of the current time, but it's like a descendant. But now this person has...
No, it's not. It's not. That is Vic.
No. I understand. I understand it's Vic Sage, but it's because you kind of find that out like later on. But when you're looking at the beginning, I mean, it's because you know when you find that witch and she's looking for a Charlie and he's like, there's no Charlie, and then you find out like, oh, my name is Charles Victor Sage or whatever. Like, yeah, okay, we get it. Like, I knew that. But in the beginning, like just going on with the story, I don't know. I kind of just. I dug it. I normally don't like Western periods, Western times. Like, I've never read a Jonah Hex books because I never cared about that timeline. But I don't know. I mean, will I say that the story is kind of basic, dealing with, you know, like stories that we've heard probably a billion times in like Westerns, which is, you know, the law, corruption, hints of racism. Sure. I mean, that's all the same kind of stuff. But for some reason, I was so into it. And I don't know if it's because I like Dennis Cohen's art. I mean, it feels very indie. It feels very independent, which is, you know, something that I like. So Cohen and Sienkiewicz, I dug like the art and I thought it fit really well. But I don't know. The story felt like there was so much deeper things inside that I haven't been able to unpack yet. But the actual story that you're reading is very like stuff that you've seen in hundreds of different books.
Yeah, I felt that this story was a bit convoluted, and in the way of saying that, you know, we do get that partial of, you know, in the very beginning he gives the name of Victor Zsasz, and you know, we do get that slight hint of racism. And let me just say, I'm a big fan of the Western genre, not a big fan of racism. I know I kind of like put that right after I talked about racism. All of our listeners are like, whoa. No, I'm a really big fan of the Western genre. Me and my grandfather would always watch the black and white Western movies. And so I would, like, right when I wake up, you know, almost every Saturday morning, I would watch that with him, and once that finished, I would always be like, hey, can we watch cartoons now? Can we watch Looney Tunes or something? But I really love the, you know, the old John Wayne movies. I love Tombstone, like all that stuff. But, you know, getting this story that we had here with this gentleman and how they kind of framed him for murder, and then, you know, Vic Sage, we understand that it's Vic Sage later down the line, you know, because he saves the man from getting hung, and, you know, and we also get this deranged priest, you know, and you can tell
actually,
that he's
talking about with you saying that finding out about Vic Sage like at the end. Now, remember the first issue was one of those issues that it was during my, I think when I went to like Orlando and I didn't read a book, or I feel like, or maybe it was the week that we didn't read like Thanksgiving. Like, I feel like I haven't, because I never read the first issue. I just remember you talking about it and reviewing it. Now, is this something where Vic Sage was maybe in the first issue? Did he, like, choose, like, where he wanted to go to unravel mysteries, and he just so happened to choose Victor Zsasz?
No.
Okay,
so
this was just kind of like the reveal.
In the first issue,
okay.
In the first issue, it was modern-day Hub City, and it started to be a little political because you had the... a little hint of the mafia with his old lover, and then you got the story of a police officer shooting a civilian that like blew up in, you know, the news like almost immediately. But before that, or after that, you know, Vic Sage didn't really feel himself because he found this little tomb or whatever, this abandoned warehouse that had a very similar tomb like you see in this issue with all the skeletons, with the hole, and he sees the glimpse of like the man of many faces or whatever in the first issue. And okay. he's trying to understand all this. And so he goes to his old mentor, which puts him in like a hallucinative type state. And at the very end of the issue, while he is still there with his mentor, you see what is inevitably in the middle of this issue, where he sees the little boy, he's looking for water, and he's saying that he needs to go help people. Like, that's why it was so confusing for me, because the very ending of issue 1 is in the middle of issue 2.
Oh, okay. So, see, that's why, like, for me, this just felt like a one-shot. So, not seeing...
Now, reading it like a one-shot, it totally, like, okay, I can disregard some of the random stuff, because it moves fluidly from when he is talking to that woman, and she's putting on the mask, mm-hmm. and then he sees the little kid, and he's asking for water and everything.
Okay, so, like, then that whole beginning part makes no sense.
Yeah. So
did they just do the beginning just so you can kind of know why Vic Sage ran into the woman and how they first met?
Yeah, basically. And I feel like what it was meant to be was the very beginning of this story is supposed to be like a couple days or weeks after the ending of issue one to say, like, hey, Vic Sage has, you know, realized where he is. And he doesn't know how to get back, so he's just going to lay low and live his life in the 1800s. And that's why you see, randomly, when they do go to hang this man, he goes to a, like, I guess where he was living or whatever, underneath the floorboard, mm-hmm. he has all of his stuff.
Yeah.
And then... he goes into that cave, and you see a glimpse of the future question in the trench coat. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm following you.
And then he sees the man that we thought was dead, but in reality it's the man with many faces, shoots Vic Sage right in the face, and he wakes up in his own apartment in modern-day Hub City. And so... through everything, through issue one going into this and then ending like that, I'm completely lost. I have no clue what is going on.
In that regard, since I didn't read the first issue, then I can see why this was all thrown all over the place. So to me, yeah. I was just like, all right, I mean, maybe this is him just trying to find, you know, the Vic Sage and, you know, just going from different time periods until he, you know, either finds out who he is or, you know, I had no idea what the first issue was. So that's why when I got this one, I was like, oh, man, it's a really cool story. But I will say that this book, now that you're explaining it, I could definitely see why it's confusing. But I feel like this book worked because of the art. I think that the art drove the story. Oh, yeah.
No, don't get me wrong. I feel like the art, the creative team art-wise, really drives this story. It sets the tone. It makes it feel... like, hey, this is definitely how this book should be drawn. But unfortunately, because of the writing and how it's kind of scattered, I was able to give this book, I gave it a 6.5. I actually reviewed this book for our friends over at Weird Science early into the night, or into the morning, actually, at like 3 a.m. I wrote this review for Weird Science, and I gave it a 6.5, and that is all art, to be completely honest.
Yeah. No, for sure. Okay, so then, I gotta read the first issue. I mean, I have it here. I have the physical copy. I just gotta read it. It's just, it's hard for me to, like, wanna jump back into, you know, like, past stuff once it's already done. Like, for me, when it's done, it's done. Yeah. And I have to be, like, in the mood to wanna read something from the past. I don't know why I'm like that as a reader.
And hopefully you will find, like, more enjoyment with issue two, you know, because you really enjoyed issue two and then you, you know, read issue one. Because I will be honest, issue one had really, really good, like, points of the story where I was like, okay, you got me hooked. You have the political statements that you're trying to tell. You have a little bit of a love interest, okay? And the ending had me wanting more, wanted me to read issue two. But now reading issue two and it being a little bit of a convoluted mess, I'm a little worried, you know? I will give it enough breadcrumbs through issue three, but if issue three doesn't get it for me, then I may not read issue four.
Okay. All right. We'll see what happens. But with that being said, we're done.
Yes.
And just to remind you guys, we are a part of the Nerdy Legion podcast network, where if you just go to nerdylegion.com and click on the tab and just click on podcasts, you'll see a plethora of comic book and nerdy shows. And I think I don't know if there's any Marvel, but I feel like if there is, maybe there might be. But you're talking about everything. I mean, from just specifically like someone like us that just do DC, there are people that just do Valiant, that just do Aftershock, that just do Dynamite. I mean, there's, or you have someone like Indie Alley that just touches on all the,
does everything,
everything indie wise. So it's kind of, you're definitely getting a plethora of really good shows. So go ahead, check them out, nerdylegion.com. You can find us at the CB_Legion Twitter page, where you'll chat with either one of us. If not, you can reach me personally at Mark Reads Comics. And where can they find you, Clay?
You can find me at Fanboy Clay on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm trying to use that a little bit more. But you can also find me on Batman News Weekly every week with Juice, or on my own podcast, Fanboy Comics Pod, which I'm actually going to have Mark on that show next week.
What?
It's going to release the first week of February for a very special release of a show. Hint, hint. It's very exciting. I'm really excited to talk about that book. And be on the lookout for that. I will announce it again once we actually publish it, but it's going to be awesome.
Sweet. Well, with that being said, we will talk to you guys next week, and thank you again for all the support and listening, and I'll see you guys next week, but after that, I'll be going
2 weeks without you, man. You're going to leave me out to dry again.
I feel like every 4 months I'm going on a trip. Man, this is a pretty good life I have.
I would love to go on a trip right now. I mean, I'm going to Dallas at the end of the month. That's a little bit of a trip, but it's only going to be like for a day. It's 4 hours. That's it.
Okay. So are you North Texas or South Texas?
I'm south. I'm in San Antonio, so I'm just going north. Just going up north, and I'm going to drive 4 hours, stay overnight, be there for a birthday party, and then drive right back. So it's not even like...
Whose birthday is it?
It is my wife's best... It's my wife's best friend's son.
Oh, my God. So, kill me now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've already had this conversation with my wife, and I got in trouble for it. So,
God. Yeah. Kill me. Like, that's just so... See, the introvert
I'm so glad that we get the books on Friday, because I'm going to make her drive, and I'm going to read.
Man, that just reminds me, like, this past week, because we had a really busy Saturday where we had, like, two birthday parties. Luckily, I was able to get out of them. And then we had, like, at our church, like, a family friend, like, their child was getting baptized. We're like, okay, cool. So I'm like, this is a busy day, but this is, like, a birthday party. She's like, you're getting him. I'm like, all right, well, you guys enjoy the party. I'm just going to, you know what? I'm gonna give the car a car wash. I think it needs to be cleaned. I can't do it, man. The introvert in me. So just thinking of 4-hour drive to go to a birthday party for, you know, something like that. Oh, God. That just sounds like such a horrible day. But, hey, you have a good time, buddy.
I'm going to try.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, anyways, I know we already said bye, but we'll say bye once again. So we'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.
All right. See ya.